ready for a new and exciting topic? The Real Estate and Mortgage Show is back with your host, Walter Montero. He's a real estate and mortgage agent in Ontario, implements internet marketing strategies, and offers an online course to invest in private mortgages. Let's listen to this fascinating episode. You will surely learn much from this topic.
Hey, how you doing? Welcome to the Real Estate Mortgage Show. Yesterday, I interviewed a guy by the name of Seif El Sali, and he owns a company from the Hamilton area by the name of New4 Incorporated. So basically, they're a general contracting company, but their specialty is something that's a real hot topic these days, which is tiny homes or granny suites. So we talk a little bit about that. I'm sure you're going to find him really, really interesting. He's a great guy, and his contact information is all at the end of the show. But make sure you check it out. Sorry about the screen quality in terms of if you're watching this on YouTube. There's a lot of sun in my face. I probably should have set that up a little differently, but I didn't. But anyway, great content nonetheless. Check it out. Seif El Sali and New4 Incorporated. Check him out. And here he is. Tell me a little bit more about what you got going on.
Yeah, that's correct. So we're the main businesses, we're a general contracting company. We have residential and we have commercial. We've done a ton of investment properties. And then what seems to be the buzz today is this whole tiny home and garden suite conversions and all that kind of good stuff. So everybody wants to hear about that. And essentially what you can do today is without any major rezoning or serious development charges, you can change any single family home into up to four units.
Up to four units, yes.
And that includes different building code requirements that you have to abide by. The more the units, the more of the building code requirements you have to abide by. So, for example, once you hit four units, you got to provide a parking space, for example. But up to three, which in my opinion is the sweet spot, you can maintain a lot of the existing.
Okay. So with the three, what do you typically see when somebody adds three? Like, I'll tell you what I see, maybe you, and you'll probably see totally different. I usually see a basement suite getting added, and then either a granny suite or, you know, some sort of tiny home in behind. Is that what you're seeing? So you get two units in the house, one in the back?
That's exactly it, because you don't, you want to avoid, the more you're over splitting it, like if you put all three units in the home, which everything is possible, you're getting three lower quality units. That tiny home is like nothing out there. You cannot get a 500 to 800 square foot detached structure that's one or two bed. That simply does not exist. If you need that and you're a young couple, for example, that's moving in or something, you're in a condo. But you're sharing walls. Your ceiling and both walls on both sides are shared. Everything's shared. The hallway is shared. So it's like, it's not ideal. So there's nothing like this in the market, which is why I think it's a massive value add. And sooner or later, lenders are going to start recognizing that. And once they do, that's going to shoot the property values through the roof.
Gotcha. So in saying that, are you saying that there is there any kind, is there a challenge, obviously, from the lending community on this? Is that a problem?
You're not seeing the full lift on the appraisal. Well, number one, the appraisals are not even coming in at the full real value because they're giving cents on the dollar back on construction costs. But construction costs is yielding so much income. So if you take this as a factor of income, these things should be worth probably four times what the lenders are saying or what the appraisers are saying it's going to be worth. And then even when you do get that value, you might get a bit of a pop, like a very small one. Some of the lenders are only going to use that. Other lenders are going to completely discount it and say, no, I'm not giving value on the garden suite, for example. That's slowly changing. So more lenders are starting to understand that this is something that is a permanent income for a home. And I think over time, as we get more comparables, this is going to be something permanent, just like a triplex or a walkout basement. You know what I mean? These have built up over the years. And because of their popularity, they're now permanently part of the price of the home.
Gotcha. Okay. Now, let me ask you a little bit of the from a logistic perspective. When you're putting a tiny home on a property, I mean, I pretty much understand being able to run water and electricity out to it. What about sewage? How where do you tap in? Are you tapping into the house? Are you tapping right into the connection on the street? How does that play out?
So that's a really good question. We tie into the home. And the reason we do that is because when you add another dwelling on the back of the home, you actually have to do a service upgrade. So when you're upgrading the service to that address, if you're upgrading the service address to the home, a lot of the fees associated with the service work fall on the public side, which is funded by the city. So you end up paying a lot less for the service upgrade versus if you wanted to go straight to the city line, then all that work that they would typically do on the public side, you would be paying for out of pocket. And that includes you getting a city contractor, doing curb cuts, so on and so forth. So you're talking, this is a $20,000, $30,000 item versus a $3,000, $4,000 item.
Gotcha, so okay.
That's why we say to tap into the home. Now, if there was any chance of a severance or something like that, at one point in time, then I would say it's worth it to tie into the street. This is definitely going to become part of the home, and I think it's going to stay like that as well. Just the way the municipalities are issuing the addresses and everything, it's an extension of the original address, and it's not like a brand new address. So I don't think there's any intention for them to be severing this, because that doesn't solve the housing crisis more. It just makes it a little bit more profitable.
Well, quite gotcha. Okay. So if you got, you know, let's say what I'm sort of envisioning here is if you've got, let's say, a corner house and you put that tiny home on the backside and it's got frontage on the other street, then you're almost better going the distance and connecting directly to the city line.
I honestly, I haven't had any that we've connected to the city line, again, because it doesn't fall under the city programs. So you'll end up paying for everything out of pocket. So the whole project goes up by, like, you know, call it 30,000. It could be a little bit more too. So we haven't found those to be worth it, because if you're doing a $120,000 renovation and building this whole thing up and turning this tiny home into a separate address, who really wants to spend another 30 on top of it, you know, 25% over budget or over the original cost to just say that they're connected to the city line? Yeah, if you can't sever, there's no
benefit. If there's no point, if there's no possibility of severance, forget it.
Yes.
Gotcha. Okay. I totally get it. So now do different municipalities have different set of rules or standards that you have to abide by? Or is it mandated provincially?
This is provincial. And it's all about enforcing the building code. Now, different municipalities may enforce the building code differently.
Okay.
Right? Because some may have... Because the building code is not really in... It's not that clear when it comes to retrofit. Because something that's a retrofit structure, in general, is meet or exceed. Right? So the cities are not doing that. They're not saying, oh, this is retrofit. This is like just like you doing a basement. No, they're holding it as if it was a new build, right?
Yeah.
So new build, for example, very easy example. Anything new build you put and you're putting bat insulation, you're going to put R22 on the exterior walls.
Yeah.
R22 needs a 6-inch cavity, right? Yeah. None of these exterior walls are 6-inch. So what do you have to do? You have to frame in front of it or reframe it.
Yeah.
In order for you to be able to fit that. Now, a new build also is going to require rigid insulation under the concrete slab.
Oh, yes. Okay.
How are you going to do that? Are you going to really dig up the whole thing?
Yeah.
No. So some municipalities are saying just go above.
Yeah. Yeah.
You see what I mean? So it depends. Each municipality could take a requirement and choose to enforce it a little bit more than others.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Okay. So who's your typical customer for this? Who are you running into? Is it older people that want to leave their house with their kids and then they go to the granny suite, or is it first time home buyers looking for extra income? Like who are you encountering out there in terms of acquiring these types of properties?
Right now it's the forward thinking investors, because this is really just at the start, like less than, call it for the sake of shooting a number out there, that 0 to 10% of people are actually doing this because it's so new. And that's usually what it takes as a proof of concept for other people to see and say, oh, okay, I want to jump into this. I do think that in the future, though, the big play is going to be generational living. So I do think you're going to see parents, grandparents, you know, thinking about stuff for their kids in the future because they may not have home ownership. So I think this is very easily going to turn into something that is generational living. Right now, it's too early for them to be jumping in, because especially those, and if you have three different generations of a family, or at least two of them that are decision makers, they're much slower to make decisions, and also they're very risk averse.
Sure, gotcha.
So they may not want to do that right now.
Okay. And in terms of costs, like what do I mean? Obviously, it's going to, I mean, it's almost like asking somebody, what's the cost of a custom made suit or a custom made anything? Like what kind of cost does somebody typically run for one of these projects? And how big is your typical project?
So if you have the key differentiating factors, if you have an existing shell there, or if you're building brand new, if you have an existing shell there,
and like a garage or something like that.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep, and it's in good shape. It's not falling over. Around 500 square feet, give or take. You're looking at 120,000.
About 120 grand for 500 feet with an existing structure.
With an existing. Yes.
Now,
if you're building new,
You're
not going to build 500. You're going to build the maximum allowable, because you get better bang for your buck as you go bigger. Yep. So you're probably going to build around 800, which is the maximum.
Okay.
Yep. And that'll cost you around 250.
About 250,000.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, and then when you say the, you said the maximum of 800 is, so is that maximum a hard number, a hard 800, or is it a percentage of the footprint of the lot, or what determines that?
Both. It's 60%. Okay. Yeah. But it's whichever is, whichever one is, I guess the lower one.
Gotcha. Yeah. Either, so the lesser of the two.
Exactly. Yeah.
Gotcha.
It's either 60% of the above grade square footage of the home.
Yep.
Up to a maximum of 800.
Okay, guys. So it's 60%. Is that what you said?
Yeah, 60%.
Yeah. Okay. Gotcha. Okay. All right. And what about are these custom built, or are they kits? Like, how are they manufactured? Are you guys make them right on site, or do they come in like a Mattamy home and just assemble the pieces type of thing?
You know, we haven't done any pre-assembled ones. We do have one building permit that's just about to get approved that we're going to do in shipping containers. In my opinion, I do not think it is cost savings in any way. The space is so small, and there's not that much material in there. There's not that much more benefit to building it prefab versus stick build. Other than the speed, obviously, you know, if it's prefab, you're going to put it up a lot faster, but you probably need 5 times the amount of time in prep work.
Yeah. These shipping container properties or homes tend to get, they're again, another popular thing these days that you're starting to see. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So what, is there any kind of design restrictions? I guess there would be, depending on the subdivision they go into, would there be?
The city is more concerned with, because there's no rezoning allowed.
Yep.
Or not, sorry, I shouldn't say allowed. I take that back. There's no required. Rezoning required. Yes.
Yeah.
There is no committee of adjustments or someone that's going to say, nah, you know,
we come don't like this.
And say, I don't like this.
Yeah.
You're not going to get that. It's just them enforcing the building code requirements, which is a building department. It's in the building department's field.
So
very different from you going to a committee of adjustments, which is planning, and it's a lot more gray and wishy-washy, you know.
Yeah, for sure. It's I get that. I've been, unfortunately, I've been victim to that.
So you know what I'm talking about.
All right. So you're saying that the your customer, or what seems to be the trend right now, is the forward-thinking investor is what you're running into. So when these guys are doing this kind of thing, when they're going out, are they typically making, do they already own the property, or are they making an offer, say, conditional on the, you know, due diligence and then bringing you in for sort of a price takeoff, or how does that deal typically flow for you guys?
So usually anybody that's call it a forward thinking investor is quite experienced.
Yep.
So they're already well aware of the price point. So if they walk through, they're like, okay, this home's a full gut. I'm putting two units. I'm probably spending 200 in the home, maybe 250, And then they look at the garage, I might be spending 100, I might be spending 120. They already know those numbers. So usually the investors that have to bring us in before the property even closes, we don't do that often, but it's usually not as experienced because you have no idea what the numbers are. Because you should know on a high level, like this isn't a $100,000 job. It's more like
300 for sure.
Yeah. So they will typically have already closed the property. They may already have started applying for the permits, but the ones that don't, we do that for them.
Okay. All right. Now, with regards to the existing, where you're getting into something that has an existing structure, is there like some sort of structural integrity analysis that needs to be done or anything like that? Or
There's always structural concerns when you get into an old structure.
Yeah.
And I would say the majority of structural alterations that are just in the field with the inspector. Yeah. But if an inspector doesn't feel comfortable, because that's not their job.
Yeah.
If an inspector doesn't feel comfortable, you know, it's something more than like one or two or five notch joists. It's something a lot more, you know, it's seriously leaning and concrete's crumbling for some reason. Then he's going to say, no, get an engineer to weigh in. I need to see either a report or a drawing for the existing structure. So the inspector can always say, no, I deem this as not safe. Get an engineer to weigh in.
Gotcha. Okay. And are the setbacks different than what they would be for like a shed or something like that?
They're very similar for new structures.
For new structures. Okay. Gotcha.
New structures are going to have the exact same setbacks as a new build home.
Gotcha.
It's the ones where you get away with less than that is if it's existing.
Yeah, I gotcha. And then that's probably where you got to get the Committee of Adjustments involved.
No.
Oh, really? Oh, okay, good. All right.
Yeah. Well, because there's no rezoning required.
Gotcha. Okay. So that's making sense to me. Okay. And with regards to like timelines, how long does one of these projects normally take to go from, you know, hey, I want to do this to, you know, it's ready for somebody to move in?
So permit process is about 3 months on average.
Okay.
So anyone that's savvy and wants to get good bang for their buck, they're going to start the permit before the property even closes.
Yep. Okay.
So
you guys will handle that part of it, will you?
Yes.
Gotcha. Okay. Exactly.
So that saves you 2 months because you could have a 2 month closing period and then we're already starting to work and we submitted to the city, at which point you're only really losing a month of payment wise, right? And carrying costs.
Now, do you guys take care of the drawings as well? You guys do the drawings and the whole bit?
Yes. Yes.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah.
So we do the drawings. We send them to the customer. They'll give their 2 cents, give their feedback. We'll go back and forth with them. And then we submit to the city.
Gotcha. Okay.
After that, the construction, optimistically, because you have to run servicing, is 5 months. And assuming that on day one, that it's warm-ish, at least for the first month.
Sure.
So we can dig.
Yeah. Okay.
So as long as you start in, call it April, maybe.
Yeah.
September or May to September, then it's 5 months.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay. All right. Very good. Now you said you're a general contractor. So this seems to be, is your business kind of offshooted in this direction or are you still doing other types of construction as well?
No, we're definitely doing other types of construction.
Yep.
But, you know, people get bored hearing about, oh, it's a commercial renovation, this many square feet, this is the project. This is more of a buzz. So I talk about this a lot more. I actually started off in real estate. So when I started off, this was 2016. And I was buying little single family homes with, potential with very little rentals to be done. And I could do like an in-law suite in the basement.
Gotcha.
And then from there, it grew and grew and grew. And, you know, I on the second one that I got, I wasn't too happy because I hired a general contractor.
Yep.
And he wasn't very good. I didn't like the work. It was supposed to be 3 months. It took six. It wasn't even done. Yep. So I was like, oh, this is so brutal. I feel like I could do a better job myself.
Yep.
Then I took over. I started doing the work myself, made tons of mistakes. I was happy about it at the time, but I thought it was great work.
Gotcha. Okay.
But so that's how this kind of built into it.
Okay, good. So just kind of more from that. So what would you say is the ideal property for this type of thing. Like what I'm envisioning is like a bungalow, raised bungalow, that you could, you know, put a unit in the back, something on a, you know, like for example, down in Cambridge, for example, we've got a lot of 1950s, 1960s style subdivisions that have your, you know, your 45 to, you know, even 70 foot lots, with, you know, a nice, you know, amount of yard. You know, these are just the things I'm envisioning. Is that what you guys are running into as well?
Yeah, but there's even smaller lots too. It definitely works. Yeah. If you get a corner lot, you get a 60 by 70, 60 by 80. That's still massive.
Yeah. No, good point. Awesome. Yeah, very good. Yeah, I think you're onto something here. We have not seen a lot of that in Cambridge. We're seeing a lot of it in KW. But again, you know, this is all kind of crept up on us during COVID too, right? So
that's true.
You know, that's the thing that I kind of find interesting is it's kind of happening under the radar. And when we had connected, I thought it was great for you guys to get on the show. That's awesome.
Awesome.
Yeah, very good. Any questions that I should have asked you that I didn't, or something that you think people need to be aware of when they're getting involved in something like this?
I think maybe focus a little bit less. Sometimes at this stage where this type of project is today, I think you've got to focus more on the fundamentals and less on the little analytics and getting into the whole analysis paralysis, because sometimes it may look like the numbers are not working out. And from one very specific standpoint, I'm just talking about the appraisal. Like if your appraiser is only giving you 50, 60 cents on the dollar, this thing costs you 120, you're only pulling back, you know, 60. Or $7,000, you know what I mean? Then an investor might think, oh, well, this is not really worth it. But if you focus on the fundamentals, there's a big shortage. You can buy these properties for about $700, put $250 into them. Yeah, you're not going to get the full lift on the appraisal, but in today's appraisal, it'll still be worth like $920-ish plus or minus.
Yeah.
And you're getting $7,000 a month in rent. Those are solid numbers.
Sure. Numbers.
And that's only going to grow with time, and so is the appraisal.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, have you ever run into any of the, like a big trend right now seems to be reverse mortgages, right? So we're seeing a lot of that. And of course, you know, bank of mom and dad, people wanting to help their kids out. Is that a situation that you think would probably fit here where say mom and dad are, let's say they're in their, you know, a little bit older, 55 plus, where they get a reverse to pay for that and then put the kids in the house and them in the back?
I think that's going to be the trend in the long term. You have the biggest wealth transfer ever.
Yeah, we're upon it. Yeah.
Right. So you have this much equity built up over that generation. And then below is this much. And then the one below is like nothing. It's like almost negatives.
Yeah.
So I do think that there's going to be a big shift and definitely something that needs to be handed over, because the older generation have plenty of equity. That down payment for them is not a big deal, but they don't have income.
Yeah, they don't have the income.
Middle generation have a bit of both, and then the kids definitely only have the income.
Yep.
So it works, you know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. Now you've got some really good videos online. Where can people find those? So give the audience a little bit of direction on that. And you guys do a great job on them, by the way. They're really good.
Awesome. Thank you. So you can either Google us. It's just Newfore, N-E-W-F-O-R-E, or you can go to our Instagram page. We're super active on there. It's Newfore Inc., I-N-C.
Perfect. Okay. Awesome.
Awesome.
Well, thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Walter.
I think you definitely got a winner here.
Awesome.
All right.
I'll let the lenders know.
All right. You bet.
Thanks. Have a good one.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye now.
You've reached the end of another episode of The Real Estate and Mortgage Show. Connect with us at therealestateandmortgageshow.com. Don't forget to sign up for our newsletter to get instant access to our new updates. See you at the next episode.